Hour number three kicking off here in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Let's talk some NFL. Let's talk some Tennessee Titans. Easton Freeze, friend of the morning show, covering the Titans. Broadway Sports. Easton, top of the morning to you.
Fellas, how's it going?
Going well. Hope you're well. The Titans made it official yesterday, or at least according to reports, bringing in Tyler Boyd, 1 year, $4.5 million to add to the Titans receiving core. Another veteran on this in this core. What were your thoughts on the signing?
Yeah, strong signing, one that we saw coming. Not shocking, right, that Brian Callahan had some interest in a player he's really familiar with, a veteran who, as he's been talking about for the past month or so, you know, he really has wanted a player on this roster to emerge as their reliable slot option. And I think the way that he plans on running this offense is reliant upon them having that kind of guy. If you looked at their depth chart before going and signing Boyd, it was DeAndre Hopkins and Calvin Ridley, and then like 740 receivers. And that telegraphs to us, like, hey, this team wants somebody to emerge, and they have no idea who it's going to be. They're just going to try to figure it out. And they, you know, I think they decided, we're not going to do that, actually. We're going to go and get our guy. And he is on the back end of his career. He has shown consistent decline in the past 5 or 6 years, but he's still a high-volume player, the kind of guy that is going to be exactly where the quarterback wants him to be, a QB's best friend kind of guy. And in the last 5 years, even though his production has gone down each year, he's still demanded at least 80 targets and played at least 15 games every single season. So that's the kind of guy they want in the fold. And I think it's going to lend itself to not just Will Levis's development and you know, having a strong receiving core top to bottom, but it's going to lend itself to Brian Callahan's offense working the way that he wants it to.
You put out a good graphic yesterday on X, kind of, you know, outlining just how old or experienced this wide receiving core is, depending on which side you want to be on. It's either old or it's experienced. Which side of the coin are you on? Is it a positive approach or a negative approach at what the Titans have done in the receiving room?
I refuse to accept your binary. It is both. They are old and experienced. But, man, they are old. I mean, I jokingly referred to this group last week when it looked like Boyd was going to be a Titan as the nursing home wide receiver room of the NFL, and some very sensitive people took issue with that. I'm sorry, it is, and you shouldn't be upset when people call this group old, because they are. They're the only wide receiver group, starting three receivers in the league, whose average age is north of 30. The next closest is Miami. Their average age is 29, and that only happened 10 seconds ago when they signed OBJ, who's almost 32 years old. So they're the only team in the league whose average age is over 30. They're also the only team in the league without a starting wide receiver who is at least one starting wide receiver who is at least 25 years or younger. Their youngest guy is Calvin Ridley, and he's going to be 30 this year. So they're old, but that does not necessarily mean they're bad. Old does not mean bad. And if you're a Titans fan, and people are going to get, because listen, the haters are going to say you're old, and the haters are right. But you can tell the haters, listen, all these old men put up 2,700 yards last year in arguably worse situations, right? Because DeAndre Hopkins was playing on a team where he was the only target, and every defense they played knew the ball was coming his way. That's not going to be the case this year. Last year, Calvin Ridley was playing on a team where he was the clear one, but his supporting cast, the guys around him, were not quite as good. And there were some serious questions about the way that they utilized him, his route tree, and some analytics-based arguments we won't get into today. But I think he's going to be utilized in a stronger, a way that lends itself more to his skill set. And then Tyler Boyd last year was catching passes from not Joe Burrow. I'm blanking on the guy's name. That's how bad he is. The guy that was playing.
Jake Browning.
Jake Browning. Thank you. Jake Browning was throwing a lot of his passes last year. So whatever you think of Will Levis, that's going to be an upgrade. So all of these old guys last year put up nearly 3,000 yards combined. And they were in arguably worse situations. So are they old? Yes. Are they experienced? Yeah, man, they are. And that's going to lend itself to Will Levis. You know, like, he's got to feel, I imagine it's kind of strange, right? When you're, you know, the young guy in the room by like half a decade, and you're throwing all these receivers and you're trying to be the leader, and yet they're all D these seasoned veterans, it might be a little bit strange, but it's gonna help him, I think.
Yeah, I thought last year Hopkins did a good job of really wrapping his arms around Levis and trying to gas him up and trying to kind of help him lead and, you know, fall in line with him. And, of course, Hopkins has the respect of veterans all across the league for how good of a career he's had. So I think that helps with Levis. But I have noticed, and I do see your chart and talking to you, it does seem like you are 100% riding Boyd in and Penn as the third starter. So you've given up completely on Treylon Burks.
I think he stinks. I've given up completely. No, I've not given up completely.
Because the numbers look different if Burks is starting. You know, like then you do have someone under the age of 25. Then the average age does go down, and maybe this chart looks a little different if it's Burks instead of Boyd.
Totally the case, and they'd still be on the high end, but they would not be leading the pack like that. You're right. But, you know, it's less of me giving up on Burks and more me being able to recognize where they are on Burks. A lot of people were questioning with this move, what does it mean for Treylon Burks? What does this mean about their opinion of him? And there were quite a few people saying, well, I don't think it means anything, right? Because Tyler Boyd is a slot-only player. Treylon Burks has so far in his career in the NFL played primarily on the outside. Even though some folks want to see him move to slot more often, myself included, you know, that's not been his track record in the league so far. So it doesn't mean anything. That's not true, right? So does the addition of Tyler Boyd mean more for guys like Kyle Phillips, who I think you could argue might be done as a Titan after this signing because, you know, he is a small slot-only player who does not have special teams upside, and Tyler Boyd is that exact same thing but better. So like that, you know, that's going to be a hard sell to have him on the roster as well, but that's a different story. With Treylon Burks, while he is not a slot-only player, what Tyler Boyd comes in and does, you know, Tyler Boyd playing 800 snaps last year, and we know from what they've told us and from looking at the track record with Brian Callahan's offenses, he moves his players around, so the outside guys are going to be playing in the slot a decent amount. We saw DeAndre Hopkins play in the slot a decent amount last year anyways, so he'll be doing that again this year. And then Calvin Ridley has inside-outside versatility. Treylon Burks has inside-outside versatility. They're all going to be moving around, and it's not going to be just purely lined up as X if you're Treylon Burks. You're going to be moving around to all these different positions. With Boyd in the fold, that's taking snaps away. That's taking targets away. So that's eating into your share of the Titans' offense, and it does pretty clearly say something about the way that they view him, that Titans brass. I think the case with Treylon Burks is the same it's been since the end of the season. And we talked on my show, the Hot Read Podcast, at the end of the year in January about how next year Treylon Burks has got to be the gravy guy for this team. He has to be the guy that you are no more relying upon Treylon Burks to break out or stay on the field for the entire season in order for your offense to succeed, in order for you to have a dangerous passing game. That's not going to be the case this year with this group, and they've done a good job of enabling themselves to say, hey, if Treylon Burks breaks out and as the fourth guy, he finally puts it together, the light comes on, and he avoids injuries and, you know, has some injury luck regression turn his way, that's great, that's awesome, it's a bonus, that's gravy, that's icing on top of the cake. But if he doesn't, and it's a lot of the same, and he's just not it, fine. It's cool. It's not going to impact really anything beyond the depth of our team. And so he will be the four. There's a chance he's on the trading block at this point. I thought that before the Boyd signing. I think that suspicion only grows with this signing. I wouldn't do it if I was them. I would not accept a day three pick for Treylon Burks. And that's all you're going to get for him. No one's going to. I will be floored if somebody sends you a second or third round pick. I don't think the trade off there of the opportunity cost, losing a former first round pick who is very talented, is very big, is very strong, is very fast, and has a lot of potential as your fourth guy, which is a really nice place to be. I don't think that trade off for a fourth or fifth round pick really tracks for me. So I say just let him be the fourth. Let him be the guy that learns from these veterans, and the expectations are significantly lower for him than they have been at any point in his career, and just see what happens.
Him stinking makes the A.J. Brown trade hurt so much worse.
You don't say.
Can you talk a little bit, coming off of the wide receivers, where do you feel like this team goes next? Obviously, they've still got some cap space there, and they're still kind of towards the top of the league in that. Do you feel like it's safety coming next, or do you feel like it's an edge guy? You know, it seems like a lot of the fan base is kind of the pounding the table for Justin Simmons there to try to fill in that slot at safety. Where do you feel like this team goes next after filing that next wide receiver three?
Yeah, it's got to be safety, right? And that's kind of what they've telegraphed to us. After the draft, their immediate post-draft press conference, Rand Carthon and some of the staff were talking about how they are going to be in the safety veteran safety market. And so a Justin Simmons-type guy is going to come in eventually. It's more a matter of when than if. They've also, through national guys, talked about, you know, there have been reports. I think it was Jeremy Fowler. That might be mistaken, but there was a national report earlier this week about how the Titans aren't necessarily interested in the edge market. Like, they don't see that as a huge need for them, I guess, and or they don't see the edge market as something worth investing in. And so I think it's going to be a safety. You know, you certainly could argue they need help at the edge position, whether it's they think they have better players than we do, or they don't think that there are good players worth pursuing. Regardless, I'm not super confident in their edge group heading into the season. You know, they draft a late round flyer on Jalen Harrell to come in and potentially be an edge rotation guy out of Michigan. I think he will be a rotation guy, but you know, your top line starters, you really only got one guy that you rely upon to be your every down, three down, marquee, hold down that side of the line edge player. You're really your starters are really scarier on the interior than the outside. That you can live like that, but you'd prefer to have some more juice outside. So that might be, you know, Rome was not built in the day, and this roster needed a lot of work in the offseason. So there's a strong chance that, you know, there is a position or two that they just are playing at with the deficit this season, and edge might be that.
Touching on the draft there a little bit, can you talk about the selection of T'Vondre Sweat in the second round? And, you know, that one was a bit of a controversial pick, it felt like, amongst the fans. Some people are really big on it, and you know, I think it'll be a guy that can make that combo with him and Simmons absolutely lethal. And on the other hand, you have some people that are kind of worried about the off-the-field issues that arise right before the draft. And, you know, you see some reports after where it's scouts talking about how Sweat is not going to fall out of the second round, and that was a guy that a lot of teams are high on. Can you kind of talk about the impact that you think he has on that D-line, being able to kind of team up now with Simmons there on the inside?
Yeah, I really liked Sweat pre-draft, and I was fond of the pick. You're right that it was super polarizing, and it was an overdraft based on consensus boards. But there's a lot of reasons to like him, and I think he's going to be a very good player. I can't speak to what he's going to be off the field, right? All I know is what they've told us, that they have really done their homework. They met with him. They were the first team to meet with him after his DWI three weeks before the draft. They clearly got an answer that they were comfortable with. And right after that official 30-visit meeting, they went down to his hometown, met with his family, met with him, learned what, you know, his life is like, what his situation is like, and then laid out some very clear, very firm guidelines, boundaries, guardrails, saying, hey, here's what we're going to expect from you, and here's what's going to happen if you don't live up to your end of the bargain should we draft you. It's going to cost you dearly. And so I think all of that is very clearly defined for him. Whether or not, you know, they're right to take a gamble on the person, whether or not he is going to pan out off the field, like I can't say that. But assuming they are correct in their evaluation of that and their risk assessment is fair, he's a really good player, man. And people talk about how it's a crazy reach on the consensus boards. Well, when you look at, like, take Dave Brugler at The Athletic, for example, one of the guys that people turn to as a North Star with the draft, he had Sweat as his 33rd player before the DWI, then dropped him down into the 90s or the 100s, wherever he had him, after the DWI. So unless some tape suddenly came to light in mid-April, that's a character drop. That's not a talent drop. The talent is all there. And so I kind of hated that. It was a lot like the Tyjae Spears pick to me, honestly, on draft night, where it's a third-round, second-day pick, second- or third-round pick, where people are looking at everything about the guy besides what he does on the field. With Tyjae, it was, look, the Titans drafted a running back without an ACL. With Tavondre, it's, look, the Titans way overdrafted an interior defensive lineman who can't rush the passer, can't play three downs, is overweight, and has character issues. We're ignoring the fact that all those things are cute and fine on paper. Go watch the guy play football. Because the guy's a dog. He's a really good player. He won the Outland Trophy last year, which is a very prestigious award given to the top interior offensive lineman in the NFL and in college ranks, rather. And so I don't see this argument that he can't play three downs, that his snap count is an issue. You can't say those things. First of all, the snap count thing is silly because amongst most of the defensive tackles that went in his area, in his range in the draft, he actually led them in snap count. Snap counts in college teams tend to rotate defensive tackles like hockey lines. That's not really a great reflection of how capable they are of staying on the field. The weight thing, you know, it's the weight thing. It's like the off-field situation. He's going to have to keep it down. I can't tell you whether he will or not, but if he does, he's got pass rush ability. He's got a nasty first step. His hand usage is fantastic. He's a really powerful player. He's going to be an awesome complement to Jeffrey Simmons, and it's going to create a math problem for teams because you can't double-team both of them, and you really would like to. Somebody's going to get a one-on-one matchup, and it's going to go poorly for them.
Easton Freeze covers the Titans. Broadway Sports Media, host of the Hot Read podcast. Last question on the way out. We were talking about it earlier. You know, I think the Titans have done a good job of adding some talent to this offseason, but still the gambling lines, when you look at the division odds, not reflecting the Titans being much of a threat at all. 10-1, kind of where it's kind of settled at. I saw as high as 13-1. Do you find that to be too high, too low, just right? How do you feel about those odds?
It's too low, and then, you know, the national media, the Vegas, they're going to be low on the Titans, and I talked about this on our show yesterday, but a lot of people were appalled by, you know, post-draft, way too early 2025 mocks that have the Titans drafting a quarterback number one overall or number three overall, post-draft power rankings that have the Titans 30th in the NFL. How dare you, the Titans have had the best offseason. How can you think that? But here's the bottom line, right? When it comes to our perception generally of football teams, unless you are dialed in, a fan of that team, or in the media market for that team and really know what's going on, our perception boils down to who's the coach and who's the quarterback. And with the Titans, you've got two guys that have a lot of promise, but they're both unproven, no matter what you think of them. Brian Callahan, a coordinator who last year was not even calling the plays for the team he was on, is now going to be a coach for the first time. We don't know what his offense looks like. We think we do, but we don't know because we've not seen it. And then Will Levis, we saw less than 10 games from last year. A lot of good, a lot of bad, and you can't say for sure what he's going to be yet. So as long as those two guys are unproven, you could have the best roster in the league around them. And in a small market like Tennessee, people aren't really going to care. Once those guys start to prove themselves, it could be Halloween, it could be Thanksgiving. Things could turn on really quickly. They could turn around, and the perception of this team could change in a heartbeat. But until then, that's the way it's going to be. And I think that the Titans fans, if you're a betting man, this, you know, is a time for value if you're wanting to place some season-long bets on the Titans.
Easton, appreciate the time, brother. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Great stuff. Give him a follow. Easton Freeze on X, the Hot Read podcast. Go subscribe, Hot Read Pod on Twitter. And the Broadway Sports Media team does a good job there covering all things Nashville and Tennessee. A little 10-1 here on the odds. I just feel like it's too high.
I agree.
I was going to say, after hearing all that, do you feel better or worse?
I feel better. And I don't know if I agree. You know, I think he does a better job of covering the team, obviously, and a little bit more in line with the Titans right now. But I don't know if I necessarily agree that I'm penciling in Boyd ahead of Burks yet, though, in terms of the starting three. I think that's going to be a competition in the fall. Agree or disagree with that, Sam? When I say fall, of course, August, training camp, all that. Like, do you look at Tyler Boyd as a locked-in third starter there?
At the start of the season, I do. But I think,
okay. Like,
you know, if you see kind of Traylon stay healthy and, you know, him rotating in there at that, like, three or four spot at the wide receiver, I do kind of think you see Traylon probably take that over. But I think at the start, I think they'll probably go with Boyd, a guy that has familiarity with the system and stuff like that.
Well, I want you to go ahead and write that down.
Okay.
Jot that down, because I'll say Traylon.
Okay.
Unless he gets traded. Do I get to say unless he's traded? Because, like, I think if he's on the team, he's going to be starting ahead of him. I wouldn't be surprised if they did try to trade him for a fifth or sixth round pick. So I don't want to take the loss if that's the case, because I'm not saying he's locked in as a third starter. But I think if he's on the team and both of them are healthy, if they're both healthy, because, I mean, both could get hurt. But, like, if they're both healthy, I think Burke gets the nod. Okay. Or Burke's that's how bad he's been. Claim Traylon Burks sometimes.
Well, that's my question. Agree or disagree that in camp, if Burks is not traded, he's playing for his life, basically, or his job.
I'd be shocked in camp if they cut him.
Yeah,
I'd be shocked at that. Like, I don't think that. Yeah. I don't think he's playing for his job and his life. But, like, I think he's gonna have. Like, he definitely is at the very least on the chopping block when it comes to starting, and like in the long term plans. Like, I mean, he could easily get phased out. But no, I'd be absolutely shocked if he just got straight up released.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that either. I'm just thinking, if at that point it's like point of no return, if he can't crack the lineup.
You're saying, like, if he doesn't show any production this year, he's got no chance of starting next year either.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of agree.
I'd be really disappointed if he didn't, like, rise to the occasion. Like, this should be an insurance policy for the receiving corps in general, you know, having some extra guys, some veterans, like we talked about, a liaison from the coach to that. But, like, for Traylon Burks personally, it should be a slap in the face. It should be like a, hey, we're questioning you as a player, we're questioning you as a man. Like, I'm spitting in your face professionally to bring this guy in. That's how I hope Traylon Burks takes it.
And he's going to be going up against every team's worst corner.
Well, yeah.
Like,
maybe even some linebackers and safeties in the slot. Like, if you can't make it work now, like, I don't think your time in the NFL is long.
What happened to the guy that was hunting hogs with his hands before the draft?
He's a fraud. That was so stupid. I never will forgive
you. I fell for that.
I never will forgive your friend Charlie for banging the drum about how good Burks was going to be.
I was banging the drum pretty hard.
Well, I don't want to be mad at you, Sam, so I'm just going to be mad at big dumb Charlie, and I'll never forgive him for what he did. A couple things, but... Yeah, he's going to be the best player in the draft, John. He's better than A.J. Brown's going to be. He's better. He hunts catfish and hogs. Well, does he catch footballs? Can he run around? Whenever the first story was, this guy actually has asthma, so being in Nashville is going to be tough. I should have known what was happening at that point. Oh, God.
He got picked ahead of a favorite receiver of mine from Purdue, David Bell, who ended up going to the Browns. And I was like, because Bell's a dog. He's starting to get a little more run in Cleveland, too. You guys would have done better with him.
I've done better with anybody, Bob.
Yeah.
We've done better with anybody. Should have just kept A.J. Brown. That was coping at its highest whenever I was like, it'll be fine. A.J., that was a terrible decision. Although I will maintain, I don't think A.J. Brown would have changed the future of the state of the Titans over the last 2 years. I don't think they win more games significantly with him. Like, they were so rotten elsewhere. Like, I don't think paying a wide receiver $25 million a year would have been a good move for a team that had no offensive line and no talent elsewhere. Is he a lot better than Traylon Burks? Yes, of course. But, like, would he have made the Titans win playoff games or win the division? No, I don't think so. It's kind of how I felt, at least. Mm-hmm. Maybe 2 years ago when Robert Woods was running around as your first guy. Maybe.
What a transformation we've had as wide receivers, you know, our wide receiver core.
They're old, they're experienced. Whether or not they can stay healthy and make it through the year, that's yet to be seen, but they do have some talent.
At least it's not Traylon Burks, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, and Kyle Phillips as your starting three.
That's true.
That's as bad as it gets.
We have had a little bit of a glow up. Good job by you, Bob, during the interview, by the way. Way to bring it.
I should have.
I listened and got some notes for you guys. You guys did a good job.
We can review it either during the break or at the beginning of next segment. Stay with us. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. The Fan Run merch shop officially live. Got some gear up in the store. Go to fanrunradio.com/shop. fanrunradio.com/shop. Got some options up there. Got some hats, some t-shirts. You can rep a morning show shirt. How about that? You've always wanted to rep a morning show shirt, right, Sam?
Yeah.
Well, now you can, buddy. Now you can. And, you know, to kick this off, we're offering 15% off for the listeners. just put in the promo code FANRUN, the number 4, the win. FANRUN for the win for 15% off. Free shipping if you buy two things, a.k.a. over $50. FANRUN for the win. FANRUNRadio.com/shop. Buy you a morning show shirt. Support us. Make us feel good. Go check it out. Bob, you checked out the gear yet?
Just some of the things I looked at with you yesterday.
Okay.
Haven't seen the site now that's gone live. But, yeah, there's some good stuff. Definitely. I like the variations on the FANRUN logo. It ties into UT Sports. Like it. Looks good.
We'll be updating that, you know, throughout the years and kind of have that running now and try to do a good fluid job with that and keep it updated. But, yeah, FANRUNRadio.com/shop. If you are interested in checking out some of the merch, get a shirt up for the drive as well. If you want to rep the drive, I mean, I prefer you buy a shirt for the morning show, but I won't be mad if you buy one for the drive. But again, FANRUN, the number 4, the win, all one word, if you can get 15% off. Just a flash sale on that, by the way. That's only going to be good for a week. It's only going to be good for a week, so use that code. All right, you said you had notes for us from the interview. Anything in particular stand out?
No, I actually enjoyed the interview. I laid back just because I sound like, you know, my voice is struggling, obviously. So I just listened as a listener, and it was good because you guys are fans for the Titans, but you also know your ball, and you hit Easton with some good questions. I thought it was good. Easton knows his stuff too, man. We're gonna be talking with Easton a lot during NFL season. So it's good to just kind of bring him in from time to time. I think he brings it.
As a Colts fan, did you get scared?
No.
Yeah.
Not yet.
Fair enough. Jace, you got a NFL team? You care about the NFL?
I mean, I care about the NFL. I don't have a team, but if I would probably were to like lean towards the Titans because they're in Tennessee, but like I've mostly keep up with the NFL to keep up with
my fantasy team. I love fantasy.
No, well, part of that, but also like players from Tennessee that are in the NFL. That's mostly what I keep
okay.
up. So like I was a big Peyton Manning fan for most of my time. So now I just keep up with the other Tennessee players.
What do you mean you're a big Peyton Manning fan for most of your life? How long was Peyton in the NFL for you being alive? Like when you're like from the age of like 10 to 15? Or
he was still in the Colts when I was watching them. So from the Colts,
okay.
from like the not like after they won the Super Bowl, but then like so that's it from like 08 or 09 until when he finished out with Denver. So
okay.
That's about.
Okay.
But I would say like I would lean towards the Titans because they're the in-state team. But
do you root for the Saints now for Kamara? Like I mean, who in the
I pull for Kamara. I don't pull for the Saints.
Okay. Well, I said no. I mean, you said you rooted for Peyton, so I mean, I imagine. I didn't know if other people were jumping on like the Saints or who else in the NFL. I guess Dobbs. I mean, you got different jerseys every week. It feels like yeah. Chiefs. You should be your lane should be like, hey, I just love Trey Smith. I've been rooting for the Chiefs. That's what your lane should be.
I was a big Eric Berry guy too. So they're like, I remember.
There you go, Eric Berry, Trey Smith. The Chiefs have been good to Vols. Yeah, I love the Chiefs.
Kamal Haddon.
Yeah, like Kamal Haddon. There you go.
Now I gotta say, Jace is young, but he's wearing a vintage Devil Rays T-shirt. That's like. Yeah. Back in the expansion years.
I remember that logo. That was a good logo. Mm-hmm.
Did you see their new
I am a Chiefs and 49ers fan.
Yeah.
That's a good bet.
Love Juwan Jennings. Love Josh Dobbs. Love Trey Smith. So my two teams are the Chiefs and 49ers from here on out.
John, do Tennessee fans that followed the Colts because of Peyton Manning, like did that
they
piss you
so
off
mad.
As a Titans fan?
Oh, come on.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
It made me so mad. Yeah. And not to name any names, but people like Houston Crest then tried to come back to the fan base after Peyton retired because it kind of perfectly coincided with, like, the Titans becoming good. I know there's, like, a little bit of a – like, they did a whole thing, and Houston especially. Houston used to make me so mad. I could say that because we're friends and coworkers. But, like, Peyton retires, then he does this whole I'm an NFL free agent thing, and he's, like, doing recruiting visits, and, oh, I might be the Raiders, oh, I might do this. Then, like, 2 years later is when the Titans became good. Then they tried to become Titans fans. Oh, Derrick Henry, I always liked him at Alabama. Oh, I love the hometown team. I want my friends to be happy. No, you made your bed, now lie it. Now I can't really make that threat anymore because the Titans stink again. But for those 3 years where we were really good, it did make me mad because there's a lot of people like that. And quite frankly, no disrespect if he's listening, I would still like to have a drink with you and maybe eat some Papa John's. But I always hated kind of Peyton Manning in the NFL. I was a Titans fan. I appreciate what he did with the Vols. Now I was like 6-7 when he did it with the Vols. But like, it didn't carry over for me in the NFL. I'd already kind of entrenched. Steve McNair is my quarterback. I've said that many times. Steve McNair is my guy. So I always rooted hard against Peyton. When he was with the Broncos, I wanted him to win with the Broncos because the Titans sucked and like they weren't a rival. But no, I hated him with the Colts. Okay. Hated him. So the people like that tried to jump ship. Now I do have some friends in my life that were Colts fans. That stay with the Colts fans.
That's fine.
And I respect them more than the people who tried to leave. I still hate them because they're Colts fans. No offense to you, Bob, because you're from Indiana. I give you more of a pass. I respect you as a Colts fan. My Tennessee friends that like the Colts, I still hate them. Just less than the people that abandon the Colts.
It's pretty fair rationale there. I can buy that.
I think so. It's really a respect thing. I mean, you hate your division rival. And the Colts, of course, ran the division for a long time. And, you know, I remember beating Peyton in the biggest game the Titans and Colts ever played, which was the playoff game. So we always have that over him. Like, the Titans did beat the Colts in the one time we played in the playoffs in Indianapolis.
Yeah, that was painful.
Yeah, so, like, we do have that trump card, at least.
I've been seeing this graphic that's getting floated around about, like, most wins since 2000 on NFL teams. The Titans were, like, eighth in the league.
Well, I mean, they were really good in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And then have been really good, you know, from, like, 19 to 22. So, I mean, like.
And you're just always average in between, you know. It was just, like, a guaranteed eight wins kind
of. No, I disagree there. We had some pretty rough years a couple times with Fisher and then, like.
Sure, but, like, I'm saying on, like, average compared to the 24-year-old stretch here.
I know, but I would like to see, because I do feel like if you just took, this has been a lot of Titans talk, but like, I do feel like if you just took the number of years where a franchise won like five games or fewer in the last 24 years, I would think the Titans would be higher on that list than you would think with the eighth most wins, because I do feel like they had some just real stinkers of years. But then like in the early 2000s, won 13 games a year, 12 games a year, and kind of balanced that out. But there were some real bleak years, man, where you really lost a lot of the fan base.
That'd be a better graphic.
But now my Chiefs and my 49ers, they got me because love Trey Smith and Juwan Jennings. Well, people root for Vols that don't win. Like, if Peyton was on a losing franchise, would they have been rooting for him? Now, maybe you could say he wouldn't be on a losing franchise because he's so great. But, you know, not everybody that's great actually wins in the NFL. Sometimes the franchise just can't figure it out. Like, it's happened to Arch Manning. It happened to his pops. Running for his life with the Saints.
Are there any Vols that are prospering in the UFL?
Javonte Payton?
I think Javonte Payton.
is he back in the UFL?
He scored a touchdown.
This week, like this iteration of it?
Two weeks ago, I think.
Oh, okay.
Jared Garantano, if you want to count him.
Adrian Martinez, I count him. He was VFL, as far as I'm concerned.
Quentin Dormady, he was playing this weekend.
He's back in the league after he survived the scandal
of
being accused of selling his selling his team's playbook and selling out his team.
That's right.
Okay, good to hear. I do find myself watching some Birmingham Baron games. I like watching them play. Big Taco Charlton out there, former Cowboy. They got some talent on that D line. They just kind of overwhelm all the other teams. They're dominant. They're going to win the championship.
Elite name, Taco Charlton.
I wouldn't want to be named Taco Charlton.
Kind of fun.
Yeah, it'd be tough to be named after a food.
Surely that's not his actual real name, though, right?
No.
So he's made the decision to keep going by Taco, so I think he's okay with it.
It's not like Taco Fall, where that's that guy.
That was his real name.
Yeah.
Can you guys start calling me Hamburger Reed?
Yeah.
See? It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It'd be cool for a little bit. I don't know how you'd like it all the time, but Hamburger Reed does feel pretty good.
Kielbasa beard.
The hell's kielbasa? What is that?
Sausage.
Seriously?
Sausage I eat just really basic, just little circles, and maybe throw it on a biscuit from time to time, put a little mustard on it.
It's like when you throw on the grill.
Kielbasa is like smoked sausage.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. See, I don't eat smoked sausage.
You're missing out.
Yeah, you are.
I've made it 32 years. I feel like 34 years now. Jeez, I thought I was 32. Just lost 2 years of my life, Bob. I feel like I've done all right, Jace. I eat pretty good over here. I don't think I'm missing out on too much.
His name's Vidaunte. Oh. V-I-D-A-U-N-T.
Yeah, I'll keep it taco then.
Yeah, T-A-E, sorry. But yeah, definitely just taco.
Okay. I got nothing else on food or on Vols in the NFL. Hopefully the Titans bandwagon fills back up. It would be nice, like, if you could just get people on your side and have people in the state. I wish more people in the state cared about the Titans.
Me too.
Like, I would. What would you give the breakdown, Bob? You're a little bit older. Maybe Sam, you'll have an opinion on it. But, like, what do you give the breakdown of why the Titans don't have more of a home base in state? Is it because, of course, they moved here in the mid-90s when some people were entrenched? Is it because people like my friends and Jace were like, hey, actually, we're going to root for Vols. We're going to root for Peyton, because it kind of coincided perfectly. Like, Peyton comes into the NFL right when the Titans were becoming a thing, and people just kind of made their choice. Like, hey, we're going to go with Peyton instead. Is it the terrorist brand of football they've played for many of the years? All of the above, I'm sure, plays parts to some people, but.
Yeah, I think it could be all of the above. But the other thing I would say is, and I always thought that this would change over time, but I don't think it has, is, like, I mean, Vol football rules the roost, man. That's
what I was going
to
say.
There's just so many people who care about nothing when it comes to football, care about nothing other than the Vols. Now, if the Titans ever went on an elite run and kind of were dominant, I think that might change a little bit. But I think that to me is the big reason. It's just the people, we know it. We know it, and we love that. They have their passion about the Vols, and they don't have time for the other team.
So you think we're just a college state?
I mean, moving from, like, growing up in Nashville my whole life and then, like, coming to Tennessee for college, like, I was actually kind of shocked at, like, how many Knoxville people don't follow the Titans. And I think it's exactly that reason. Like, I just think Tennessee Vols football is such a strong brand and, like, something that you can latch onto for, like, year long, that I think some people just, when you're 3 hours away from an NFL team, it's just not, like, it just doesn't hit the same kind of.
I definitely know there are some people like that, but I'm more interested in the people that like NFL football but just like, or really, or dislike, or, like, hate or don't care about the Titans. Like, I get it if you're like, hey, I just grew up a Cowboys fan my whole life and I'm 40 years old, I'm not going to change. Like, I get that. But people like our age and younger. Because, I mean, I was like 6, 7 when the Titans went to Memphis. So, like, that's kind of what I grew up with. And anybody younger than me should, you know, be ingrained with them being here.
See, for me, it's kind of like the opposite from Sam, because I've grown up, I'm from just right outside of Knoxville. I go from Maryville, so then driving 3 hours to MTSU, there's a lot, because a lot of people are, like, moving to Nashville, so it's becoming, like, more of a pro sports city with the Predators and the Titans. But then there's a lot more, there's still a lot of Tennessee fans out there, but then there's a lot more, I'm sure Sam can know, there's more Alabama and Ole Miss fans like that out there.
Well, those schools are close, yeah, too. I mean, Alabama, obviously, plus, the run they had on, and it's close, yeah, enough, and transplants for sure.
But, yeah, it's definitely coming more of a pro sports state with all those people moving in from out of state to Nashville. But there's still a lot of Tennessee fans. They just market it more for the Titans, and because they want to have, like, a newer generation fan base, I suppose. This would be my guess.
Yeah, I mean, I know I kind of make fun of all the people that say, like, oh, the Titans should draft a Vol and all that stuff. But, like, I do think there's probably is something to it, to, like, the certain parts of the fan base. Not me, a distinguished NFL fan, someone who cares about the team. But, like, I do think you would have had such a residual effect just in the fan base and in the state had they just been smart enough to take Trey Smith. Somebody who was good
that
enough.
Seems so easy.
Yeah, like, you needed him, and obviously he turned into a really good player, but, like, you needed him. But also, like, take a chance on the local kid that
in
people
the sixth
love.
Round.
Yeah, that people love. Like, how do you let that go? Like, how do you let Juwan Jennings go undrafted? Like, when you need receivers too, and, like, he does fit, like, what Vrabel wants to do in terms of toughness and run blocking and all that stuff. Like, I just feel like maybe just let the tie go to the local kid. Like, I know you can't really bring that up inside the NFL front office because they'll be like, oh, that's stupid. We got to just get the best player and blah, blah, blah. We don't. But, like, you know, I do think it would go somewhere. Like, if Trey Smith was a Titan or Juwan Jennings was a Titan, I do think you would get 5 or 6% of people.
The Trey Smith one is, like, baffling to me.
It was, because desperately needed offensive lineman. Yeah, he was a five-star that was really good. And you just had to hope, like, hey, the blood clots don't come back. And, like, they haven't. Knock on wood. Like, he survived and thrived. Like, I mean, and he's an all-pro level guard.
And he's not the only player that an NFL team has taken a chance on with, like, health risks in the sixth round, you know?
Not only NFL teams, the Titans drafted a guy with a broken spine in the first round. Yeah. Caleb Farley was walking around with a broken back, like, it wasn't playing football.
and a torn ACL.
Jeffrey Simmons was coming off of a torn ACL too. Like, I mean, like, there's been plenty of injury concerns. I get blood clots are a little different if you have to force medical retirement and all that, but like they said, it was under wraps and under control, and it has been. So that just kind of drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. We'll do some basketball updates, some portal updates as we wrap up the show. Last call on the other side. Stick with us. Last call here on the program. Bob, you got a couple portal updates for us?
Yeah, well, the one that's of greatest interest, you know, we keep talking about this. We're in a bit of a holding pattern on Chaz Lanier. And by all accounts, everything we've heard, it's like he's ours to lose at Tennessee. Just waiting on him to finish his process with the G League evaluation, because he just got invited to that camp. There's rumors that he's going to be making a visit to Tennessee on the 18th, which is about, well, that's 10 days from now. But we keep saying, you know, this whole notion of, that's great, that's great. Sounds like once he gets that feedback, he's going to come sign with Tennessee. However, yesterday on the Eye on Basketball podcast with Gary Parrish and Matt Norlander, Norlander's somebody who I do put some stock in terms of his sources and everything, he made the comment, and he said it looks like he's projecting towards Kentucky, to quote him. He said, Tennessee's in the mix, but now, who knows if he really knows anything. Kentucky, I don't doubt, is, you know, making a run as much as they can. We know Chaz has that do not contact tag, but that doesn't preclude people in Chaz's camp from talking to other suitors, and we know that it's all about money at this point, at least if you've got big college programs coming at you, and if it's equal in that regard, then it comes down to money. So I don't know. I don't want to sound an alarm. I don't want to get too worried, but at the same time, man, I wish that visit was coming this weekend, and I wish that we could learn a little bit more, because again, we talked about this yesterday on our show. We feel like he's pretty critical to the team. John, you didn't agree as much. I mean, I think you felt that he.
I don't think he's critical in the sense of success.
Like, right. He makes us better. We'll be good without him.
Right. That's kind of where I ended.
But there's something that bothers me, man. If Tennessee happens to lose him to Kentucky, that's going to sting.
Well, I don't think we can win a bidding war with Kentucky.
Yeah. Agreed.
I feel like, though, if he does take that visit on the 18th, you have to make him commit right there. You have to do everything you can right there, because then you don't want to have it just kicked down the road up until the final deadline.
No, that's a good point. Lock him down, because at that point it's getting so late in the game anyway. Let's just hope, you know, again, that's 10 days away. Let's just hope that he stays true to his word, keeps doing his process with the G League, and then does the visit. But we shall see. We're going to stay close to this. It's obviously of high interest to all the Vol fans. We've heard so much good stuff about this kid. We want to have him here. So, and then I saw Rick Pitino got arguably one of the two or three best remaining players in the portal, Kadari Richmond from Seton Hall. He committed to St. John's. So, there was another point guard I thought Pitino got too. So he's been active lately. Adu Tierro from Kentucky, formerly Kentucky, ends up following Cal to Arkansas. So he's going down there. And so Cal's put together a team. And what's interesting now is, this is another thing I heard from Norlander, is Cal is saying now that he may only run with 9 or 10 players going into next season. He's not necessarily going to just fill spots to fill them. So that should be interesting to see. He's always always feels like he's trying to be contrarian in how he does stuff, but that'll be interesting to watch. But the big headline there mostly is the whole situation with Chaz Lanier. The days can't pass quick enough. Love to get him locked in.
Do you think Lanier ends up at Tennessee? Because I feel like yesterday you said it was 85%.
I still do, but I mean, maybe I've tempered that percentage down to 75. You know, I mean, there's part of me that thinks if everything we've heard, and that was from good sources, is how locked in he's been with the coaching staff at Tennessee and how they're helping him in this process and they're being supportive of him in this process to get feedback from the NBA and the G League more specifically. I want to believe in that, you know. But he's a kid too, man. You know, again, you can be wowed by money. And like you said, John, if it becomes a bidding war, particularly with Kentucky, that's going to be hard. That's going to be hard to battle.
It's funny that you say, like, he's a kid, which, and then says, you know, he can be swayed by money just because. I don't think that's just reserved for being a kid. I think anybody can be swayed by money. Like, I think, you know, he's an older player, of course. He's got extra eligibility. But I think anybody in the world can be swayed with money. And Lexington's close enough to home as far as I would be concerned if I'm him. And again, I think they desperately need him. I think he would be a good addition for us. I think they need him.
Yeah.
I want him. They need him. So I would imagine the price is going to reflect that as well. And that would be pretty, I don't want to say disheartening, but it would be a blow if he ends up there. That'd be an L to Mark Pope, and that would kind of hurt.
Stop me if you've heard this before with a potential Tennessee target in the transfer portal, but he told this No Ceilings podcast that
he
was on.
I've heard of a prospect telling somebody something before. Stop, I've heard that before.
I really want to put my defense on display is what he said.
Who said this?
Chaz Lanier.
Yeah.
Sounds a lot like Dalton Connect last year.
Okay.
Now he said that's what he wants to do in the G League showcase, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he can do that in Rick Barnes' system.
Yeah, I mean, if that's what you're wanting to actually sell, like, hey, like, the name of Kentucky matters, sure, but like Mark Pope's never done anything for any NBA prospects, and like Dalton Connect's turning into a lottery pick. So like, if you are actually wanting to put on your defense, look, just for the record, I know what you said. Is it Norlander said?
Yeah.
Grant Ramey, Austin Price, guys covering, you know, for On Three, Volquest, they said they still feel really good about Tennessee spot and not necessarily buying the Kentucky stuff.
Yeah.
So I know the national guy is saying that, and he might have better sources from Kentucky side, but Tennessee still feels okay about where they're at with Lanier.
I do too. I'd just like to see it. It just feels like we've been waiting so long. I'd just like to see it locked up because, again, in the absence of activity or progression, you just allow other schools to kind of take notice, evaluate, because the available players, there's less and less of them. And like you said, John, Kentucky, for someone like Lanier, they need him. So that's all. I just there's going to be more and more pursuit, I think.
Quick thoughts on Pacers-Knicks game two tonight?
I think it's a must-win for Indiana. I will say that. I don't know if they can do it. We'll see what their mindset's like coming out after. I'd like to believe they come out believing after game one that, hey, we need to finish better. The refs played a big role in it, but they allowed the game to be that close. So I'm going to say the Pacers win, mainly because I know they have to. Don't know if it will happen that way, but that's what I believe.
Jay, Sam, really solid A-minus show from you guys today. Nice. Good job.
It's a lot of improvement from that C that I had yesterday.
So. That's it, baby. It's fluid. Just keep going. The more you talk, the lower it's going to get, though. Be careful. We're wrapping the show up now. You're going to fall down. The G.I. Jake Show coming up next.